Those Who Do Not Learn from History, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Once again, glad to be with you here in the studio for, well, the second time in a long time. We don't get to look face-to-face on each other very often in the studio. We're usually doing these by Skype. Good to be back in the studio.
Yeah, so if you miss all of the dead air spots, pops, cracks, and fade-outs, well, we're sorry.
Yeah. No more electronic humming and noises and things that are unrecognizable as anything other than really weird computer sounds.
Well, you know what? I'd take that over what we're talking about today, Chuck, because, folks, what we're going to do is we're going to continue on today with a little bit more in-depth about the recent effort by our State House of Representatives and the State Government Committee to try to jam through, in one hearing, House Joint Resolution Number 3, which is a joint resolution to put Ohio on record as applying for an Article 5 convention. Now, they say an Article 5 Amendments Convention, which I think is an interesting way of titling this, because what they're trying to do is set the argument that you can limit a constitutional convention to only hearing specific amendments. There's only one small glitch in that plan, Chuck. Article 5 of the United States Constitution is silent to how the convention operates. It does not say that when you call for the purpose of amendments, that those are the only things that that convention can hear.
And that's the equivocation in the case. What they're trying to claim is that Article 5 shall propose amendments to this convention on, I'm going to read the thing and this will make it clear. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the applications of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress.
Well, but the key is, Chuck, you could have stopped reading right about the point where you said,
yes,
as one or other of mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. You could have stopped reading before you got to that point, because now we're getting into history.
Yes.
Because the original convention was called, and we've talked about this before on this program, for the express purpose of amending the Commerce Clause in the Articles of Confederation in order to clean up some issues that had arisen from that. What we ended up with is the document which I'm holding in my hand here, which we just read from. Ladies and gentlemen, you see, the point is, the former Constitution of the country, the Articles of Confederation, was used in order to kick off the convention. Once the convention convened, there was no more need for the articles, and voila, the new document, the Constitution of the United States. Now, nobody is going to sit here and seriously argue in any way, shape, or form that what we ended up with in that experience was worse than the original. Because our Constitution has been an incredibly stable document that has held us well for the last, 233 years.
Right.
We've had this Constitution. But the problem is, ladies and gentlemen, just as our earlier founders, our conventioneers, we're going to call them, just as our earlier conventioneers took the mechanism from the existing charter to kick off the new convention and get rid of the old charter, so will likely any new conventioneers called by the states when 34 of them get together and say, we want an Article 5 Amendments Convention, that history and the precedent could very well repeat itself, that those new conventioneers will get into the room and say, okay, now that we've been called under the auspices of Article 5, it's time to trash it and the rest of the Constitution that surrounds it and start all over again, because that is the precedent of history. And as like I said at the beginning, those who do not learn from history, as the philosopher George Santayana said, are doomed to repeat it. Our big problem right now, our state officials, including the chairman of the State Government Committee, the sponsor of HJR 3, and honestly a fairly good guy all the way around, I mean, he's a good representative, by the name of Ron Magg from the Warren County area of the state, haven't been good students of history. They don't understand, although I believe in testimony on Tuesday, they were given more information on the history of how we got our current document, how we already had a governing document called the Articles of Confederation that was in effect and was the charter for the colonies. How when the original conventioneers got together, the first thing they did was vote that everything they would do would be in secret. And somebody would poo-poo today, oh, we can't do that with the internet and blogging and everything else. So what? Doesn't matter. The second vote that they did would be the same as what we perceive the second vote would be at the new convention, and that is to basically nullify the current operating document, which was the Articles of Confederation, i.e., basically, they chose to secede from the Confederation and craft a new document to put together the Union.
Well, that's right. And they could do that legally.
Because they're the convention.
Because they are a convention.
And a conventioneer, I'm sorry, I don't care if he was delegated by the state or picked by Congress, once that hammer drops on the convention, that delegate to the convention has more plenipotentiary power than the congressman, the United States senators, the president of the United States, any sitting Supreme Court or federal court justice, and every governor and state legislator across the 50 states. They are the drivers, and period.
There is a reason for that. Let's discuss this, because this is what's being skipped over. There is a reason why a convention is a more potent lawmaking body than a legislature. Because the convention writes the laws that the lawmakers have to obey.
That's right.
And how can they do that? How can there be a higher lawmaking body? That is because the convention is the direct representatives of the true sovereigns in this situation, and that is we the people.
That's right.
We're handed this down from British common law and British constitutional law. We didn't make this up. We didn't deduce this on our own. We're reading original source documents that, in fact, the Goldwater Institute, the group we are in opposition to on the Con call, skipped over when they were preparing their documents. And they skipped them over precisely because they refuted exactly the case they were trying to make. Let's not kid ourselves, Barry. The Goldwater Institute has wheelbarrows full of money to throw around to make their case.
And if they don't, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, who also is behind these pushes for constitutional conventions, for balancing the budget and reducing the federal debt, is getting boatloads of money from various sources as well. Both Goldwater and they seem to keep their funding sources hidden from the public.
And we'll come back to that, but we've got to explore this thing. In the history of Britain, there have been two important events, and both of them happened in the 17th century, the 1600s. One was after the Revolution, and a lot of people don't know, and a lot of Americans don't pay attention to that, but there was a revolution in England that overthrew the king and beheaded Charles II and brought in a thing called the Protectorate. And it was Oliver Cromwell who sat in the Protectorate. Cromwell died, and his son did not want the job. Didn't feel up to it, probably wasn't up to it. Just like many great men, the son just not the same person as the father. Cromwell probably would not have liked a hereditary protectorate anyway. In fact, I don't think he wanted to be the protector all that much. He did it because there was no one else who would do it. Cromwell dies. There's no king. Charles II's head has been cut off. One of the rules of Parliament is that no Parliament can sit and there's no king.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's why in England it's known as done by this act. When you have an act that's passed by Parliament, it's passed by the king in Parliament. In other words, Parliament passes it with the king on the throne as the executive head and the head of government. Well, there is no king. Parliament can't sit. So what do? You've got a dilemma on your hands. Well, at that point, the only way to deal with the lack of an executive head of government is to find a way to fill that monarchy seat. And the only way to do it is with a convention, because the convention represents the people who are to be ruled by this monarch.
Right.
The only way to do it is to have a convention. In 1660... 2 years after Cromwell dies, Parliament calls what's called the Convention Parliament.
That's right, the Convention Parliament.
They gather in order to fill the seat, and who do they choose? They choose Charles II's son, James II, to fill that slot. 20 years later, James II turns out to have been something of a problem.
Just slightly.
And so what the Britain goes through what's known as the Glorious Revolution. And it's called the Glorious Revolution because there really wasn't any fighting involved.
No. It was an abdication of the throne.
It was an abdication of the throne. Basically, James II was run off the throne and out of the country without firing a shot. There were threats. There was an invasion of England by William of Orange. But James II realized the jig was up and took off. Went to, I think, France for sanctuary. Once again, Parliament is left with no king on the throne and therefore no legal parliament. So what do? They have another convention parliament to fill that slot. And they go to William of Orange, who is married to Mary.
Yes, that's right.
Who is the sister of
James II.
Of James II. And ask him and Mary, William and Mary, to sit on the throne. And William, who is a constitutional prince in the Dutch Republic, essentially says, I'll come in as a constitutionally controlled monarch and under no other circumstances.
That's right.
So the convention parliament essentially passes the British Bill of Rights and brings the monarchy back as a limited monarchy. Basically, how could they do that? Again, they are the direct representatives of the people who are to be ruled. That's the way a convention works. They get to choose what kind of government there will be and how it is structured because they are the direct representatives of the people who are to be governed. Is a legislature the same? Yes, but it is not given plenipotentiary powers. It is given limited authority, and the limitation on that authority is the Constitution under which they are to operate.
That is correct.
So you think that sounds circular, but it is not. A constitution is supposed to be a fixed body of law under which a legislator is bound by oath to obey. What we have in this country right now, de facto, is an out-of-control group of legislators. So here we are because our legislators who we elect and bound by oath to obey the Constitution refuse to balance the budget. Now, is that the fault of the Constitution, or is that the fault of the people who continually send these people back to Washington, despite the fact that they know they're going to vote out programs that cost more than is brought in through tax revenues?
That's a tough choice. Let me think about that one for a couple of minutes before I answer that one. As said, firmly tongue-in-cheek.
Yes, exactly.
But that's the whole point. If you do not understand your history, you will repeat it, and you'll repeat the worst parts of it. The point is, we have to understand the American experience based upon what was happening in England. The Glorious Revolution is a precursor to the American Revolution in the 1700s, and the structure of what we were under the Articles of Confederation, which led to those original conventioneers, those delegates, who were bound, by the way, by each of their states to only deal with the issue in the Articles of Confederation regarding interstate commerce. That's the vast majority of those state delegate charters bound them to discussing only a single issue.
Exactly.
Just like our current HGR 3 thinks they're about to do. Now, the experience was the delegates realized they were the show. That convention, once it was called, was the highest lawmaking body in the land, and they did exactly what anybody else would do in that position. We're going to make it up the way we think it should be.
Well, the bottom line of this is that some of the delegates knew going in that they were going to write a new document.
Yes, they did.
They knew full well that they were not permitted to do so.
And many of them were the ones who were at the Annapolis Convention.
And that's right. That's exactly right. They had been looking since the Annapolis Convention, and we are just about out of time. Wow, we were going to run really short here. But they were looking for some kind of a crisis to get people to actually show up to a convention, because at the Annapolis Convention, you had 12 delegates from 5 states show up. Well, that ain't no way to run a constitutional convention in a 13-state confederation.
Well, and the point is, Chuck, just like today, there's always a way to generate a crisis in order to get what you want done. And in that time period, the crisis that was generated was
Shays' Rebellion.
Shays' Rebellion. And that was what caused Washington to finally agree to being a part of the convention.
There would have been no Constitution if George Washington had not attended the Philadelphia Convention.
That is absolutely correct. Stay with us tomorrow, folks. We're going to talk a little bit more, not just about history, but about what's happening now and what we can see in the future. And we're going to have a special guest that's going to be joining us later in the week to give you a blow-by-blow of what went on during this hearing. Folks, we've got to stay on our state legislators, the House State Government Committee, Go to our website, find their contact information. We'll give it to you. Call them. Tell them they're making a terrible, terrible mistake because they're not learning from history.
Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.